Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 19th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, U.S. Frackers Return to Haunt OPEC, by David Weth, Mia Gindis, and Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. OPEC's one-time nemesis, U.S. shale, is rearing its head just months after the sector was all but written off as a threat to the cartel's sway over worldwide oil markets. Drillers from the Permian Basin in West Texas to the Bakken Shale of North Dakota have ramped up oil production well beyond what analysts foresaw, pushing output to a record just as OPEC and its allies put the brakes on supplies in a bid to arrest price declines. This time last year, U.S. government forecasters predicted domestic production would average 12.5 million barrels a day during the current quarter. In recent days, that estimate was bumped to 13.3 million. The difference is equivalent to adding a new Venezuela to global supplies. That growth is reverberating around the world, calling into question the OPEC Plus group's strategy of curbing supplies to prevent potentially catastrophic price impacts of a glut. It also makes clear that the legions of companies that pump oil from U.S. shale fields still wield enough power to bedevil the cartel's efforts. The U.S. clearly played a huge role in the global market in 2023, including pressuring OPEC Plus to curtail their output, Wood Mackenzie Limited analyst Ryan Dumon said during an interview. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, abetted by its Russian ally, overly sought to check the influence of North American shale as early as 2014, when the group flooded world markets with crude in a bid to recapture market share from the ascendant U.S. oil sector. The move aggravated an existing supply glut and triggered a 65% plunge in crude prices that took 14 months to bottom out. That collapse sent a jolt through the economics of U.S. shale, ending years of breakneck production growth. And although the expansion eventually resumed, it was thrown into reverse by the global pandemic in early 2020. The shale industry emerged from that setback with a resolve to prioritize returning cash to investors instead of chasing production gains. Meanwhile, in the years since the 2014-16 sell-off, the OPEC Plus Alliance, as it came to be known, worked to enforce supply quotas among member nations as part of a broader strategy of balancing global supply and demand to maintain robust prices. That self-discipline helped stabilize the market in 2020, and again this year in the face of slowing demand and a glut of oil. But OPEC Plus's latest cuts, announced at the end of November, haven't stopped crude from slipping further. And all the while, U.S. shale, plus production in places like Brazil and Guyana, has crept higher. Further action by OPEC Plus may be needed to shore up the market. Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman told Bloomberg earlier this month that the group can absolutely maintain discipline beyond the first quarter of 2024 if required. Part of what makes the U.S. crude surge surprising is that companies managed to increase production even as the number of drilling rigs at work fell roughly 20% this year. That productivity gain has confounded many analysts and researchers who have long relied on the so-called rig count as a predictor of future crude output. Explorers are squeezing crude out of new wells more efficiently because of innovations in everything from electric pump technology to new strategies for deploying workers while fracking wells to minimize downtime. A key example has been the replacement of the iconic decades-old pump jack with high-tech underground gear as tall as a three-story building that sits inside a well to push more crude to the surface. On a recent windswept morning in the Permian Basin of West Texas, Diamondback Energy Inc. drilling chief Yong Cho stood in a control room partway up a 180-foot rig as a crew went to work on a fresh well. The company has reduced the time it takes to drill an average well by about 40% over the last 3 years, thanks in part to boring slightly smaller holes, adjusting the solution that's pumped down shafts to power drills, and subtle refinements in the steel and polycrystalline diamond-tipped bits. In 2019, the average well took me 19.5 days, Cho said during an interview afterwards. Now, it takes me 11.5 days. But a shale well isn't finished when the drilling is done. A separate array of workers and gear is called upon to frack it so that crude can begin to flow. It's the last and most expensive part of oil production. And frackers have achieved similar efficiency gains, shortening the process by 3 days to a little more than a week per well, according to Kimberlite International Oilfield Research. Every year, we're seeing more efficiency, Chevron Corporation Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth said during a recent talk at the Council on Foreign Relations. And you're seeing, through a number of acquisitions and consolidations, companies that have the scale to bring these capabilities to bear in a way that just drives further efficiency and industrial kind of progress there. Analysts had expected U.S. producers to increase output modestly this year. That's partly because after years of heavily investing in production and being burned by downturns, companies pledged to keep spending in check and focus on returning cash to shareholders. The role of private producers may have also caused forecasters to underestimate oil production because their activity is harder to model than publicly listed peers who report earnings every quarter. Out of the 10 fastest-growing producers by volume since the pandemic, 7 of them were private companies, according to S&P Global. Mewbourne Oil Company and Endeavor Energy Resources LP led the charge, adding more barrels to the market than ExxonMobil Corporation since 2019. There are indications that U.S. drillers may once again exercise more restraint when it comes to expanding budgets. Annual growth in industry spending is estimated to be just 2% in 2024, down from this year's 19% growth rate and a fraction of the record 44% increase of 2 years ago, according to Evercore ISI. It's not drill, baby, drill, like it was during the shale boom. Angie Gildee, who leads KPMG's U.S. energy practice, said in an interview, "It's meaningful but measured growth." This article is entitled, "BP Joins Shippers Avoiding Red Sea's Rising Attacks," by Julia Fanzeres and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Oil rallied as more oil companies and tanker owners began to avoid the Red Sea amid increasingly frequent attacks in the region. West Texas Intermediate rose as much as 4% to trade over $74 a barrel and reached the highest intraday price in 2 weeks. BP PLC said it will pause all shipments through the Red Sea, while Equinor ASA is diverting vessels away from the region. Euronav NV, a major shipowner, is also keeping its ships clear, citing safety concerns. The firm's actions on Monday followed similar moves by container liners. A company that provides ship management and thousands of crew members to vessels was also asking ship owners to consider alternative routes. It has been escalating beyond what we have seen at any point in time, really. Lars Barstad, chief executive officer of the management arm of Frontline PLC, one of the world's largest tanker owners, said in a Bloomberg television interview, "We are afraid that it is only a question of time until we see a ship that is completely unrelated to Israel or any part of the conflict that will be attacked." Despite the geopolitical risks, crude has still dropped more than 20% from its late September high and is down around 9% for the year amid rising U.S. shale supply and skepticism over promised OPEC Plus output cuts. A shifting outlook for Fed rate policy has swung prices in recent days, with officials' commentary recently dissuading bets on aggressive cuts next year. The time spreads between monthly contracts, a critical barometer for supply and demand, continue to indicate weakness. West Texas Intermediate's prompt spread is trading at 35 cents in contango, the widest discount for near-term barrels compared to barrels to be delivered later, since February. This article is entitled, "County Asks for Comment on $170 million Jail Debt. Commissioners Vote for Certificate of Obligation to Finance New Jail Build," by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Midland County reported that it has approved a certificate of obligation for $170 million in debt to build a new jail. In November 2022, Midland County commissioners selected the site, County Roads 110 and 140, for the new jail. The planning process, including financing, construction, and locations plans, continued throughout this past year. At the beginning of the process, Midland County said that the proposed jail should cost around $120 million. During a commissioner's court meeting in November, it was revealed the jail will cost around $170 million. During the same meeting, commissioners heard they could finance the jail using a certificate of obligation, or general obligation bond. A certificate of obligation is debt that does not require voter approval, while a general obligation bond would require input from Midland County voters via a bond. The most recent improvements to the Midland County Jail were funded through a general obligation bond. On December 13th, during a special meeting, county commissioners voted on a resolution to move forward with the certificate of obligation. In a decisive move aimed at enhancing the infrastructure and ensuring continued progress on the new Midland County Jail complex, the county commissioners successfully voted on a resolution for the issuance of a certificate of obligation during last week's special meeting session that was held on December 13th, a press release from the county stated. This vote begins a 45-day window to receive public input on the decision, Midland County reported. Voting on this resolution to issue a CO starts a 45-day window to hold a meeting to receive public input. The date for the public hearing still needs to be determined. However, we are certain it will fall within the 45-day window, Midland County reported. Once we reach the end of the 45-day window, the county commissioners have to then decide whether to keep moving forward with the certificate of obligation, or they have the opportunity to back out. The jail complex is expected to cost $170 million. Midland County also reported that, quote, "the public does have the right to petition the certificate of obligation," unquote, and, quote, "the issuance of the certificate of obligation is a pivotal step in securing necessary funds to support essential initiatives vital to the growth and well-being of our county jail," and, in return, community. This column is called From the Editor. It is entitled, Thank You, Midland, for 29 Wonderful Years. By Stuart Doreen, Editor. I will be leaving the Midland Reporter-Telegram at the end of the month. I never expected to write that previous sentence, but an opportunity in Midland has come up that seems like the perfect fit for me at this time in my life. I am a community man, a Midland man. This city is important to me, just like it has been to my family going back to the 1930s. Few people know this, but in high school we were tasked with writing a Where Do You See Yourself in 20 Years essay. I wrote, writing for the newspaper in Midland. I remember coming to Midland as a boy, getting the Reporter-Telegram when it was delivered in the afternoon, and scanning it to see box scores of my favorite sports. I remember growing up in Dallas and watching the Jessica McClure coverage and getting my first glimpse of Gary Painter on the news show Nightline after the 10 p.m. news in Dallas. I wrote in sports about Midland being title town in the late 90s and early 2000s when our high school teams went on a state championship run that was unprecedented and will never be duplicated. I have been proud to say I am a Midlander. I didn't care for that Bloomberg hit piece on our community. It was either written to provide a guilt trip about the Hogan Park project that stalled inside Midland City Council chambers, or to help rally the troops for a school bond election later in the year. It wasn't journalism, but a poorly crafted assault to make our community look bad in the eyes of people beyond our city limits. And, sadly, there were Midlanders that laid out the red carpet for that writer and helped push a narrative that didn't reflect reality. I will always defend Midland and its residents to those from the outside. As the editor of the Reporter-Telegram, that was part of the job when people called from the outside wanting me to participate in stories designed to make Midland look bad because of our industry, our politics, our faith, and or morals. This city is unique. It is worth fighting for. There is no community this size in the state that has industry contribute as much as oil and gas does. I'd also like to see another that benefits more per capita from foundations than Midland. Our generosity knows no limits. Over the next few weeks, I will offer more about my departure, my time with the Reporter-Telegram, and my hopes for the most important metropolitan area in Texas west of Interstate 35. And frankly, that competition is not even close. But for today, knowing that it has been my honor working to make the Reporter-Telegram the best newspaper possible in a city worthy of producing governors, presidents, and the fuel that the world requires. My first day at the Midland Reporter-Telegram was January 9, 1995. During that time, I have risen through the newsroom ranks, working side by side with people like Mary Dearen, Ed Todd, Terry Williamson, Georgia Temple, Mella McEwen, Oscar LeRoy, and a multitude of others. Professionally, the Reporter-Telegram has been my home and my life. I will miss it immensely. This article is entitled, Home for the Holidays? Midland Animal Services offers December Adoption Special by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Midland Animal Services reminds the community that wonderful pets are awaiting a forever home. The December Adoption Special of $25 includes a microchip, rabies and booster vaccinations, parvo, distemper for dogs, and FVRCP for cats. It also includes a $70 voucher toward the spay or neuter of the adopted animal. For all inquiries, please contact Midland Animal Services at 432 785-7420. The hours of operation are Tuesday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. and Saturday 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. This article is entitled "Man Sentenced for Rap Show Shooting" from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf announced that a 19-year-old Midland man was sentenced late Friday to a term of 60 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. Midland County DA. A Midland County jury found Greg Anthony Barrera III, 19, guilty of a felony offense of murder on Friday afternoon after 3.5 hours of deliberating, according to a news release. After hearing additional evidence during the punishment phase of the trial, the jury then deliberated approximately 1 hour before announcing its verdict of 60 years in prison and a maximum $10,000 fine. The evidence presented in the case showed that the defendant fired 5 shots from a 9mm pistol at 19-year-old Samuel Anaya, who was walking in an alley behind the Kessler's Hall event venue on Wall Street on May 29, 2021, the district attorney's office reported. Based on the evidence, the shooting happened after Barrera drove his truck up from behind the victim, who likely never saw the attack coming. The defendant was 17 and legally an adult in the state of Texas at the time of the killing, while Samuel Anaya was 19. Both young men were at the venue for a rap music showcase that attracted a large crowd from the local music scene. It is believed the shooting was likely motivated by disputes among different groups involved locally in rap music. Evidence at the trial highlighted the uptick in the last few years of shootings in Midland involving younger perpetrators and victims. The district attorney's office then reported that the defendant, who had been free on bond pending trial, was taken into custody and must serve at least half of the sentence before the possibility of parole. The case was prosecuted by Midland County Assistant District Attorneys Bonita Tribble and Tim Flathers. The trial was held in the 441st District Court and presided over by Judge Jeffrey T. Robnett. This article is entitled "Midland Health Announces $156 Million Expansion." Multi-phase project to include building of new office building, tearing down older part of hospital. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Midland Health is planning an expansion that includes an 84,960-square-foot professional office building and an estimated $156.885 million in improvements around its campus in central Midland. And hospital officials stated the multiple-phase project will be accomplished without a tax increase. Midland Health CEO Stephen Bowerman told the Reporter-Telegram the hospital will use a bond secured by hospital revenues for nearly $90 million. The expectation is philanthropy will cover another $45 million. Combine other revenue sources and cash on hand, and Midland Health will be able to eliminate 238,000 square feet of building space from the original 1950s building that has become a money pit to operate, and add another 115,000 in new space. The signature project piece, a 4-story professional building located east of the main hospital building and the Texas Tech Jenna Welch building between Illinois Avenue and Ohio Avenue, that will be home to numerous departments, including information technology, the foundation, marketing, Hope Chest, MCHS prenatal clinic, human resources, the police department, an employee gym, employee health infection control, and conference rooms. Midland Health said the space will be 63% built out and provide the entity with space for future medical offices as Midland grows. West of the professional office building and immediately north of the Welch building will be the garden area for patients, family members, employees, to get away from the hustle and bustle of things happening inside the hospital, similar to the O'Shaughnessy Garden inside the main complex. Officials said a covered walkway will exist for those going back and forth from the hospital to the office building. Bowerman said now is a good time for the project, which has been in the works for years. He said a facilities committee recommended the plan and the board approved it because hospital finances will allow it. Taxes only make up 10% of Midland Health funding, meaning there are other revenue streams that will be used. Bowerman said not as many people are leaving Midland to have babies. The number of surgeries continues to grow, as does use of the hospital's emergency room. He said those same dynamics, like a 25% increase in the number of babies being delivered at Midland Memorial, might be the reason for expansion opportunities at the main medical facilities in the future. But at this moment, it means we're in a good financial position. So we think we can take that on, Bowerman said. Other opportunities from the project include the repairing of the hospital roof from a hailstorm in 2018, the addition of two operating rooms, 20% growth, that hopefully means those needing surgeries won't have to wait as many weeks. A redesign of space for those using endoscopy areas, making it easier for patients to enter the area. Phase 2 of the project includes the demo of the south and east towers at the current main hospital building, and the building of a new facade, especially facing south on Illinois Street. As Bowerman said, builders will have to be surgical in their approach with the original structure, as it still connects with more modern areas of the hospital. The demo is going to be very delicate, Bowerman said. We're going to have to be very surgical as they work to get that torn down. But they've evaluated it, and they think it will be accomplishable. Phase 2 also calls for a multi-million dollar renovation of the Abel Hangar Pavilion, which is across Illinois from the main campus. That's going to be our infusion center, Bowerman said. He added the infusion center will be able to care for people on an outpatient basis. We have it now, but it's full all the time. The second floor will include a simulation center for nurse training and respiratory therapy. There also will be an area for a surgical residency program. Costs. Phase 1, relocation and repairs. Texas Tech Residence Program relocation to lobby spaces, $1.311 million. Hail damage repair, $22.804 million. Alliance, West Campus relocation, North parking lot, $4.744 million. Infills, professional office building. West Courtyard infill, radiology patio expansion, $15.235 million. Operating rooms 11 and 12, patio vertical expansion, cardio, $14.766 million. Endoscopy renovation, $3.249 million. POB, MOB, garden, $65.448 million. Costs phase 2, based on conceptual. Utility reroute to Tech, $1.935 million. East and South Tower demolition, $8.330 million. South entry, refacade, site work, parking, $12.06 million. Abel Hangar repair renovation, $7 million. Timeline. March 2023, board approved to proceed with schematic design phase. May 2023, board approved to proceed with development design phase. August 2023, board approved to proceed with construction documents. September 2023, design complete. November 2023, request board approval of project budget and contractor. February 2024, construction starts. July 2025, courtyard infill construction and POB complete. October 2025, OR construction complete. November 2025, begin phase 2 of project. Funding. Bond issuance, $89.5 million. Philanthropy, $45 million. Bernhard, $15.855 million. Cash related to energy work. Cash, $6.53 million. This article is entitled Plans Approved for Nonprofit Medical Clinic in Southeast Midland by Mella McEwen, Business Editor. A new medical clinic is in the works for Southeast Midland. Planning and Zoning Commissioners approved a request by Midland Community Healthcare Services for an additional zoning of LR, Local Retail District, to construct a nonprofit primary care medical clinic and co-located in-house pharmacy at 1009 South Jackson Street. The site is in the process of being annexed into city limits, with the request going before the Midland City Council on January 9th. Michael Austin, Chief Executive Officer of Midland Community Healthcare Services, told commissioners the organization cannot expand its existing clinic at 801 East Florida Avenue and hopes to add something positive for the Southeast Midland community. The site is a former oilfield trucking and heavy equipment operations and maintenance yard, and Austin told commissioners a Phase 1 assessment performed during due diligence didn't find any instances of contamination on the property, though contamination has been found at neighboring properties. Austin also assured those concerned about the increase of traffic on Jackson Street that the organization is sensitive to those concerns and plans to divert traffic visiting the clinic, which he estimates could be as high as 400 patients a day, to the north end of the property, so traffic isn't going down Jackson for the most part. Commissioners also approved, by 4 votes with 2 abstentions, a proposed replat of 349 Ranch Estates, located east of Tejas and south of Navajo. The approval was conditioned on the developer completing public improvements prior to the approval of a final plat. City staff had recommended denial of the request because the application lacked a drainage study. Developer Lance Friday told commissioners the drainage study and plat will be submitted in the next week. He urged the commissioners to approve the preliminary plat so he could more quickly move forward to the final plat. He told commissioners he has spent several years diligently trying to develop the property and make it into a tax base. This article is entitled Texas City Lifts Shelter in Place After Marathon Refinery Leak by Alicia Diaz, Bloomberg. Texas officials lifted a shelter-in-place order after asking some local residents to stay at home following a chemical release at Marathon Petroleum Corporation's Galveston Bay refinery. Multiple agencies have been conducting air monitoring, and all readings in the affected areas and throughout the city are normal, Texas City officials said in a Facebook post. We will continue to monitor the situation closely. All roadways initially shut down around the refinery are now opened, the post said. A local ABC News affiliate said sulfur dioxide was released, citing officials, but no injuries had been reported. Under federal guidelines, residents were instructed to stay inside and reduce airflow in their homes by turning off furnaces, heaters, and air conditioners. The finery suffered a fire last week, which occurred at a sour water tank and didn't appear to impact operations, people familiar with the matter said at the time.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, December 19th. ARPA funds water plant on city's Tuesday agenda. The Odessa City Council will hold a special council meeting Tuesday, and ARPA funding and the water reclamation plant are two of the items on the agenda. According to materials provided to the council, City Manager John Beckmeyer wants to consider accepting the second disbursement of American Rescue Plan Act funds issued to the city in June 2022 in the amount of just over $10 million. The city deallocated $6.4 million of the funds in November and must now expend nearly $9.6 million by December 2026. In other matters, the City Council will discuss the findings of Performance Services Incorporated, which conducted an assessment of the Bob Darrington Water Reclamation Plant. Last April, the company expressed interest in signing an energy savings performance contract with the city, similar to one they currently have with Odessa College. The 220-employee company tries to find ways school districts and municipalities can save money through capital improvement projects, and if those projects don't work, the company compensates them. PSI finds third-party financing for the capital improvement projects using the city's credit rating, and they get paid based on the construction projects as they are completed. After 18 months to 2 years, the third-party analysis is done to ensure the city actually has saved the amount promised. During an April council meeting, PSI representatives told council members they think the city should replace all 45,000 of the city's water meters, upgrade the wastewater treatment plant, build a 2 million gallon elevated water tank on the north side of town, and convert all of the city's buildings to LED lighting. The group noted 6,000 of the city's water meters couldn't be read, and due to short staffing, employees are estimating monthly usage of some meters regularly. In addition, they noted the city's meters have antiquated moving parts that malfunction regularly and can't be replaced. New meters don't have moving pieces. During the 3 p.m. meeting, the council is also expected to accept $100,000 from ICA, and the city will donate that funding to Clarksville, Tennessee, tornado victims. The council will also approve for the second time an ordinance naming Robert Martin, Odessa Municipal Court's presiding judge, and Keith Kidd as associate judge. According to Martin's resume, which the Odessa American obtained through the Texas Public Information Act, Martin obtained his law degree from Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama, in 1995. He served as a judge advocate for the U.S. Army, Florida National Guard, and U.S. Army Reserve from May 2000 to May 2015, was a Colonel Branch Commander for the Bexar County Sheriff's Office from 2012 to 2022, and has been a senior attorney at the U.S. Army Mission and Installation Contracting Command Headquarters in Fort Sam Houston since June 2011. Skill Point to hold pre-apprentice electrical program graduation ceremony. Skill Point Alliance Permian Basin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization that provides fast-paced, no-cost job training in the skilled trades to underserved and under-accessed populations, is holding a graduation ceremony for the organization's first pre-apprentice electrical cohort of 2023. The program begins at 1 p.m. Wednesday, December 20th, and will be held at the SkillPoint Alliance Permian Basin Midland College Advanced Technology Center, 3200 West Cuthbert Avenue, Midland. This four-week, fast-paced class prepares students for work as entry-level electrical apprentices. The course covers electrical safety, hand tools, power tools, and the differences between residential and commercial employment job functions. Participants obtain their OSHA 10 certification during the program and will receive assistance to obtain their Texas Department of Licensing and Registration TDLR Electrical Apprentice License. Key speakers will begin the event by giving their remarks, followed by a short graduation ceremony. Students will then compete in an exhibition of skills, showcasing what they've learned throughout the HVAC technician program. Students and staff members from SkillPoint Alliance Permian Basin will be available for interviews to discuss the need for skilled workers in West Texas. Alternative Education Center earns state award for counseling support. Ector County ISD's Alternative Education Center has earned the Texas Crest Award for 2023-24 in recognition of its exceptional counseling program and comprehensive support services designed to enhance the overall well-being of students. The award comes from the Texas School Counselors Association, TSCA, which started CREST in 2005 to recognize schools that have demonstrated and committed using the Texas model to improve the lives and achievement of students in academic, career, and personal social domains. At ECISD's AEC, the counseling team is made up of Brenda Carrier, Ronaldo Duran, and the campus's communities in schools representative Tina Castillo. CREST looks at the counseling program in five categories: introduction to the school and the role of the professional school counselor, program implementation cycle, foundational components, four service delivery components, program curriculum. CREST is a continuous improvement document that gives a school counseling program an opportunity to demonstrate effective communication and a commitment to obtain results. CREST helps counselors to evaluate their counseling programs, promote their programs to the stakeholders in their district, demonstrate the effectiveness of their guidance and the counseling programs through empirical means, and to implement the Texas and national models for school counseling programs. CREST winners will be recognized during the annual TSCA conference, which will be held February 4th through 6th in San Antonio. TxDOT issues construction updates. The Texas Department of Transportation has issued construction updates for the following dates and locations: South Loop 250 in Midland County, Monday, December 18th through Friday, December 21st. Lane closures on State Highway 158, South Loop 250 for work on the bridge decks. Interstate intersection of State Highway 191 and Avalon at Interstate Highway 20, mile marker 278 through 283. Monday, December 18th, road repairs and sign installation on Interstate Highway 20 at the Ector Midland County line at FM 1788, mile marker 122 through 127. State Highway 176 and Business Interstate 20 at Martin County. Monday, December 18th, road repairs on State Highway 176 at State Highway 349, State Highway 176 intersection at Martin Howard County line, mile marker 277-306. Monday, December 18th, road repairs on Business I-20 at County Road 4 at Business I-20, Interstate Highway 20 intersection, mile marker 338, 343. Interstate Highway 10 in Pecos County, Monday, December 18th, debris removal on Interstate Highway 10 going east and westbound, starting 8 miles east of FM 2023 in the Pecos River. To the Pecos River, mile marker 285 through 328. FM 869 in Reeves County, Monday, December 18th, culvert work on FM 869 at County Road 206 to County Road 339, mile marker 362 through 364. Road conditions and traffic updates available on Facebook at facebook.com/tx.odessatx and Twitter at twitter.com/tx.odessa. The power of hobbies. Do you have a hobby, something you enjoy doing in your free time, where you can be creative or just have fun? Some people tend to stray away from their hobbies as they get older due to being too busy or feeling like hobbies are for children. However, having something to do outside of work and responsibilities can add more meaning and enjoyment into life. Studies have shown that having meaning in life is one of the most important things for people, and that doesn't mean it has to be all related to responsibilities, family, parenting, schoolwork, etc. We all need something that also brings joy and fun to our lives. Women specifically tend to struggle with not making time for hobbies or even socializing due to prioritizing responsibilities such as children and household chores. A motivational speaker named Stan Jacobs quotes that, to be happy in life, develop at least 4 hobbies. 1 to bring you money, 1 to keep you healthy, 1 to bring you joy, and 1 to bring you peace. Hobbies can also be a good way of coping with life stressors. When we do something fun or creative, it releases dopamine, serotonin, or other chemicals in the brain that help with emotion, stress management, and gives us a sense of accomplishment or meaning. There are certain hobbies that can provide more health benefits to us, such as running, yoga, meditation, weightlifting, etc. However, the smallest hobbies can produce a chemical reaction in the brain that will pull us through and make life more peaceful for just a moment. Viktor Frankl wrote in one of his books that those who have a why to live can bear with almost any how. This shows the power of just having something to strive for or focus on. Need some ideas for a hobby to try out? Below are some common examples. Exercise, video games, podcasts, drawing, reading, dancing, sewing, painting, writing, singing, crocheting, photography, music, sports, woodworking, puzzles, poetry, languages, building models, cooking, and there are so many more. Find what you enjoy or are passionate about and start doing something fun. If you or a loved one need help navigating through any mental health struggle, contact us at Samaritan Center 432-563-4144. We now also offer both counseling and psychiatric services. UTPB closure. University of Texas Permian Basin will be closed for holiday break beginning December 21st and will reopen January 3rd. Pope approves blessings for same-sex couples that must not resemble marriage. Pope Francis formally approved letting Catholic priests bless same-sex couples, the Vatican announced Monday, a radical shift in policy that aimed to make the Church more inclusive while maintaining its strict ban on gay marriage. But while the Vatican statement was heralded by some as a step toward breaking down the discrimination in the Catholic Church, some LGBTQ plus advocates warned it underscored the Church's idea that gay couples remain inferior to heterosexual partnerships. The document from the Vatican's Doctrine Office elaborated on a letter Francis sent to two conservative cardinals that was published in October. In that preliminary response, Francis suggested such blessings could be offered under some circumstances if the blessings weren't confused with the ritual of marriage. The new document repeats that condition and elaborates on it, reaffirming that marriage is a lifelong union between a man and a woman, and it stresses that blessings in question must not be tied to any specific Catholic celebration or religious service and should not be conferred at the same time as a civil union ceremony. Moreover, the blessings cannot be used to set rituals or even involve the clothing and gestures that belong in a wedding. But it says requests for such blessings for same-sex couples should not be denied. It offers an extensive and broad definition of the term blessing in Scripture to insist that people seeking a transcendent relationship with God and looking for His love and mercy shouldn't be held up to an impossible moral standard to receive it. For those seeking a blessing should not be required to have prior moral perfection, it says. There is no intention to legitimize anything, but rather to open one's life to God, to ask for His help to live better, and also to invoke the Holy Spirit so that the values of the gospel may be lived with greater faithfulness, it added. The document marks the latest gesture of outreach from a pope who has been welcoming LGBTQ+ Catholics, a hallmark of his papacy. From his 2013 quip, "Who Am I to Judge?" about a purportedly gay priest, to his 2023 comment to the Associated Press that being homosexual is not a crime, Francis has distinguished himself from all his predecessors with his message of welcome. "The significance of this news cannot be overstated," said Francis De Bernardo of New Ways Ministry, which supports LGBTQ+ Catholics. "It is one thing to formally approve same-gender blessings, which he has already pastorally permitted, but to say that people should not be subjected to exhaustive and moral analysis to receive God's love and mercy is an even more significant step. The Vatican holds that marriage is an indissoluble union between man and woman. As a result, it has long opposed same-sex marriage and considers homosexual acts to be intrinsically disordered. Nothing in that new document changes that teaching." And in 2021, the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said flat out that the Church couldn't bless the unions of two men or two women because God cannot bless sin. The 2021 pronouncement created an outcry and appeared to have blindsided Francis, even though he had technically approved its publication. Soon after it was published, he removed the official responsible for it and set about laying the groundwork for a reversal. In the new document, the Vatican said the Church must avoid doctrinal or disciplinary schemes, especially when they lead to a narcissistic and authoritarian elitism, whereby, instead of evangelizing, one analyzes and classifies others. It said, ultimately, a blessing is about helping people increase their trust in God. It is a seed of the Holy Spirit that must be nurtured, not hindered, it said. It stressed that people in irregular unions of extramarital sex, gay or straight, are in a state of sin, and it said that shouldn't deprive them of God's love or mercy. Even though a person's relationship with God is clouded by sin, he can always ask for a blessing, stretching out his hand to God, the doctrine said. Thus, when people ask for a blessing, an exhaustive moral analysis should not be placed on a precondition for conferring it, the document said. The Reverend James Martin, who advocates for a greater welcome to LGBTQ+ Catholics, praised the new document as a huge step forward and a dramatic shift from the Vatican's 2021 policy. "Along with many Catholic priests, I will now be delighted to bless my friends in same-sex marriage," he said in an email. Traditionalists, however, are outraged. The traditionalist blogger Luigi Casalini of Mesa in Latino, Latin Mass, blog wrote that the document appeared to be a form of hearsay. The church is crumbling, he wrote. University of Notre Dame theologian Ulrich Lehner was also concerned, saying it would merely sow confusion and could lead to division in the church. The Vatican statement is, in my view, the most unfortunate public announcement in decades, he said in a statement. Moreover, some bishops will use it as a pretext to do what the document explicitly forbids, especially since the Vatican has not stopped them before. It is, and I hate to say it, an invocation to schism. Ramon Gomez, in charge of human rights for the Movement for Homosexual Integration and Liberation Group in Chile, said the statement was a step toward breaking down discrimination in the church and could help LGBTQ plus people in countries where even civil unions aren't legal. But, he said, the document was belated and contradictory in specifying a non-ritualized blessing that cannot be confused with marriage. Such a mixed message, he said, thus once again gives the signal that same-sex couples are inferior to heterosexual couples. The Vatican admonition to refrain from codifying any blessing or prayer appeared to be a response to Flemish-speaking bishops in Belgium who last year proposed the text for a prayer for same-sex couples that included prayers, scriptural reading, and expressions of commitment. In Germany, individual priests have been blessing same-sex couples for years as part of a progressive trend in the German church. In September, several Catholic priests held a ceremony blessing same-sex couples outside Cologne Cathedral to protest the city's conservative archbishop, Cardinal Rainier Maria Wolke. The head of the German Bishops' Conference welcomed the document. This means that a blessing can be given to couples who do not have the opportunity to marry in church, for example, due to divorce, and to same-sex couples, Bishop George Beitzing said in a statement. The practice of the church knowing a variety of forms of blessing. It is good that this treasure for the diversity of lifestyles is now being raised. In the U.S., the Reverend John Osterl, a Catholic priest and hospital chaplain in Pittsburgh, said many priests would probably not be open to offering such a blessing, but he welcomed Francis's action. I think the Pope has learned to accept people as God made them, he said on Monday. When I was growing up, the assumption was that God made everyone straight. What we have learned is that is not true. In accepting people as God made them, and if Jesus' primary teaching is we would love and serve one another in the community, I think that's what gives Pope Francis the openness to God's presence in those relationships. Love and Light Donation. Deadly tornadoes in Clarksville, Tennessee, recently tore through the city. The city of Odessa will send a $100,000 donation to the city to help those affected by the tornado. The donation was given by ICA to the city of Odessa to give to Clarksville. When disasters strike across the country, ICA, owned by Odessa's John Bushman, has always been generous and quick to help other communities. The company wants this donation to be from the Odessa community to the Clarksville community. Their tornado was rated as an EF3 with top winds of about 150 miles per hour and a 34-mile-long track. The Tennessean reported 6 people were killed in the tornadoes and dozens of others were injured. NWS said one was in Clarksville and another in the Gallatin area. The Tennessee Emergency Management Agency received reports of 13 possible tornadoes across the state.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.